Massachusetts Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas made the surprising announcement earlier this month that she's decided not to seek re-election next year. Tsongas said after a decade representing her district northwest of Boston, the timing of her decision feels right. Congresswoman Tsongas joins us on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon, Deb. Glad to be with you.
So what made you decide that now was the right time?
Well, this is, as I've often said, I think this is one of the best, if not to me, the best job in the world. I think it takes people by surprise to hear that when they sort of watch the goings-on in Washington, D.C., but the reality is it gives you an extraordinary opportunity to have an impact on the lives of your constituents, our communities, as well as we debate the broader issues as a country and our role, what we should be doing here and across the globe. So it's a wonderful job. So this was a very bittersweet decision, but as you said in your opening, I've learned in life that there's a time for endings and for new beginnings, and after much thought, I just decided that this was one of those times.
Does your decision have anything to do with the current political moment that we're in?
It doesn't. You know, we're elected for good times and bad, and I certainly understood that when I first sought this seat, and continue to feel that way. But the reality is, this was an announcement just that I will not be seeking re-election. It's not an announcement that I won't be fully serving for the next 16 months, in which we have so much to debate, and I plan to be very much a part of that, and I look forward to the coming months as I finish out my term.
You know, some polls out this week put congressional job approval ratings at about 11%. I'm assuming journalists are lower, although I don't think they compared. But what do you say to folks who say that, they're frustrated? Why doesn't it seem that Congress can get anything done? Why are the divides so deep? What do you say to those folks?
Well, the reality is that the deepest of the divides are among those who are in control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and that happens to be the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the historic opportunity they've been given that they control all branches of government, an opportunity to come together and advance their agenda, they've been unable to do that, and it's a reflective of their divisions. There's essentially, in my view, three wings to that party. The Freedom Caucus, which is the most conservative aspect of it, that which is representative by Speaker Ryan and Mr. McConnell, and then President Trump. And the divisions among those three wings are very deep. In the meantime, we as Democrats have to simply make a strong case that we are a better alternative, and I certainly think that's the case.
But some folks say, you can't just say that you're a strong alternative. The Democrats don't have a cohesive, clear message going forward. Is there, do you think, that the message has been clear and or has it been communicated well enough, or what would you say to the folks?
Well, I would say that in the post-election period, some hard work was needed and a real close look at how to better connect with the voter. It was clear that we were coming up short in that regard, but I do think that we've come forth with what we call a better deal for Americans. It's an ambitious new economic agenda that shows a renewed commitment on our part to the men and women across America who feel and who have been left out and left behind too long. But it did require some reflection, and it wasn't a visceral overnight response. We had to think long and hard about that. So we'll be out there making the case. But this is just the beginning of that. So we'll focus on how we create more jobs, better jobs, raise income for the American worker, how we lower the cost of living for American families, especially when it comes to pharmaceuticals, which can be such a drain on a family's pocketbook, and how we have an economy that gives every American the tools to succeed in this century, given the many challenges of globalization and changing technology that we face.
There are some folks who obviously are concerned about health care as another issue, dealing with both Democrats and Republicans. You've talked about voting for health care as being a very proud moment for you in terms of voting for the Affordable Care Act. And, of course, now what's going to happen with that is still unclear. Is it difficult to leave when this is still in limbo and may still be in limbo by the time you leave at the rate things are going?
Well, I think we'll know more in the next 16 months. One of my very first vote was around children's health insurance, and the reality is we're coming up for reauthorization of that very important program in September, sometime this September. So that's a vote that I look forward to casting, and I don't see that there are the divisions around that there have been around the Affordable Care Act. So hopefully we'll reauthorize that for a good number of years to come. I do think that the repeal and the replace effort is, I'd like to say neutered, but I don't know that that's the case. We may have a symbolic vote in the House of Representatives on the part of my Republican colleagues that goes nowhere. But in essence, I think the American people have loud and clearly made the case for the benefits that they have received under the Affordable Care Act, that it would be devastating to take it away from many, especially those with pre-existing conditions who worry so for its impact. And I know when my husband was diagnosed with cancer, as he was a United States senator and made a decision to leave public office to go into the private sector and be able to wrestle with his health issues, one of our great fears was that he had been diagnosed and would he ever have health insurance again. We were fortunate in that we went into a group plan through his employer, so that was never the issue for us that it is for too many Americans. But I certainly feel the obligation to take away that fear that too many feel, and I think so far so good, but the fight is never over. When I first got to Congress, a congresswoman who'd been there for a number of years said she had to get used to how long it took some things to be done. So I think that's certainly been the case as we've expanded health care for millions of Americans. It hasn't been without a fight. The fight will go on, but in the end, the American people are speaking and testifying to its importance.
But our understanding at this point is that the whole issue of the pre-existing conditions and being denied insurance is going to remain the way it is right now. Would you agree with that?
It is, and that's okay. The thing. That's, you know, number one, you want to, for the moment, you want to hold on to that and all the other gains we've made that have brought health care to so many Americans that otherwise just simply couldn't afford it.
Looming issue right now is what happened this week. It was Tuesday when President Trump threatened to shut down the government if Congress didn't pass a new spending bill with funding to construct the wall at the U.S.-Mexico border. We have a little piece of tape here. This is what the president said in Arizona. Let's listen.
Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas, do you think that's a credible threat? And if so, what can Congress do to try to avert a government shutdown here?
Well, I actually looked to what Speaker Ryan said just yesterday. And number one is that because there aren't, the spending bills are not in place, would not be in place by September 30th, that would fund government through the fiscal year, we're likely to pass a continuing resolution that's a stopgap measure that would keep government funded. And he did not expect it to include a border wall. So he knows what a difficult undertaking it would be to have as a precondition funding for the border wall. He certainly would not be able to expect votes from we Democrats. And there are a good number of Republicans within the ranks who really just can't, you know, who have other issues with spending. So he's going to need us. So I think the threat has been made. Whether or not it actually comes to that remains to be seen. But the fact that Republican leaders are suggesting that it won't be the case, my guess is, at this point, it's a meaningless threat. And I hope that to be the case.
Also this week, President Trump's speech on Afghanistan. You're on the House Armed Services Committee. And the president said his original instinct was to pull out of Afghanistan, but he's concluded that the consequences would be unacceptable. And so he said conditions on the ground will guide our strategy from now on. What does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, I've made 6 trips to Afghanistan, and I haven't been there in recent years, but in the past 3 years. But before that, I've made 6 trips, and I've always been so impressed with our military there. They've done absolutely everything they've been asked to do. But looking at what President Trump has said, I don't consider it to be a plan. To me, he's announced an open-ended commitment. It doesn't have a timetable. It doesn't even have a suggestion of what the metrics would be, how you know when you're being successful. There's a lack of transparency on the number of troops that he expects to deploy. There are numbers that are thrown out there, but you know, we've had no real indication of if that's actually the case. We don't really know how these additional troops will help achieve his goals, so we don't know what success looks like. So I do think that in order for us to put any more resources, especially the resources of our military who've already given so much into this, that we should have a robust discussion on the floor of the House. And I, for one, feel we should have yet another authorization for use of military force so that we can come together or not as a body to think that this is a continued investment we should be making.
And what do you think then would have been the reason behind the president having a speech like this and leaving so much uncertain?
Well, I think that's a question we'd have to ask him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's reflective of his own ambivalence that he does feel. And as I've said, I've seen the gains. I frankly have seen the gains that we did make more, not so much in the military side, but especially as I've been over there with an emphasis on visiting our soldiers at Mother's Day. So we especially connect with our women soldiers to thank them for their service. They sacrifice so much, as do our male service members as well. But also we've made a point of visiting with women across the country, and we have seen the extraordinary gains that have been made for women and for children. And I think those are things we should all feel proud of. And I think in terms of the way in which they're governing themselves, it's a challenge. There's continued corruption. But you see in President Ghani a man whose intentions are good, even if he has trouble implementing them. So there have been gains. But whether or not additional military efforts there are required, I think, is something we should broadly debate. Even the military would say that there is no military solution to this, that you need robust diplomatic engagement. And our president is, you know, making these investments on the military side. At the same time, he's putting huge cuts in place in the State Department. So you're losing all the expertise that is needed to hopefully sustain and bring that country to a peaceful resolution. So, you know, I think it's inherently contradictory, and I do think we need to have a robust debate about this.
But I think he also said that the U.S. leaving left a vacuum there that helped create ISIS.
Well, we're talking about two different things here. We're talking about, do we add more, or do we stay the way we are, or do we leave? And what he's proposing is additional support, military support, without a clear sense, from my view, a clear explanation of what will be gained by that.
Just briefly, in our last minute here, your seats generated a lot of interest. We heard from State Senator Jamie Eldridge just today that he is not going to seek your seat, but there have been several names floated. You know, your district leans Democrat, but do you have concerns that it might go Republican?
Well, it's 50% independent. It's not a simple district. 50% independent, 35% Democratic, 15% Republican. So it's never been a simple one. You have to earn the vote and trust of your constituents in order to, first of all, be elected and then successfully reelected. But there, you know, Hillary Clinton won this district by 58%. It's been Democratic since 1974. I won the seat in the last election with 68% of the vote. I'm confident with the talent pool out there and those who are expressing an interest, it will put a Democrat in place again.
All right. Departing Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Deb. Good to talk with you.
That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.